Hey, it's Lisa Carlin from Attacking Third to tell you about the all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe. It's equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend. The Hyundai Santa Fe features available all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, plus available dual wireless charging pads, ensuring that you can take on any adventure. It's ski season, and with the all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe, I can easily load the car with all my gear plus my friends in the third row and make it right to the base of the slopes with all-wheel drive. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Hey, everyone, and welcome into Attacking Third, a CBS Sports Soccer podcast. I'm Sandra Herrera, lead NWSL writer for CBS Sports. Joined today, as always, with my colleague and co-host Lisa Roman, analyst and broadcaster for CBS Sports. In today's episode, we're chatting all things news and notes across the globe of women's soccer, and of course, a bit about some World Cup prep because we are just roughly under 2 months out from the World Cup. We've got a lot to get through, but before we take a deep dive on everything, a quick reminder: go ahead and subscribe to us on YouTube. Also, as a podcast, leave us a rating and review. That helps us out so much here at A3. Follow, like, and download so that you never miss out on a single episode. And good morning.
Good morning.
How you doing, bud?
I'm good. You know, allergies can be tough sometimes. You get down and out a little bit, but I'm good. Excited to chat about all things happening around the world of women's football today, especially with you, as always.
You're a champ. You're a champ. I feel you on the allergies. It's like you always have that like initial excitement when the weather finally matches the calendar and you're like, yay, sunshine, and warmth, et cetera. And then there's something about that pollen that's just moving around in the air. And then it just attacks you. But hopefully we see you on the mend, bud, and we'll get through this episode together with everyone else joining us. Listen, if you are in the chat joining us live because, you know, you subscribe to us and you get those alerts whenever we go live, I want to see the get well hearts in the chat for Lisa. We need to make sure that we give her some energy this morning. So hit us with the get well emojis. It's like the bandage heart. Make sure she's feeling better this morning. And let's start talking about some women's soccer news and notes. You know what? Let's just start with the big stuff. We got to talk about some transfer news, okay? Because that's where everyone like tends to get, I think, most excited when it comes to player movement, rumors and or otherwise. But it's going to impact the United States women's national team a little bit. You know, players who play overseas and you want to be up to date on their club play. Probably the most recent news out of Lyon, essentially, with the United States women's national team midfielder Lindsay Horan is set to extend her stay at Olympique Lyon beyond her initial loan spell with the team. The head coach, Sonia Bonpastor, also essentially confirmed that Amandi Henry, Katerina Macario, Sina Broom, among others, will be leaving at the end of the season. So they will no longer, you know, be part of Lyon's roster moving forward. But also gave a little tidbit that there are ongoing discussions with Marozan and Les Salmer. So they're trying to keep a couple of good midfielders there, I think, in Marozan and Horan to kind of move forward, especially, I think, you know, in light that Amandi is really on the move.
Yeah, completely. I think it's important also, like, the Lindsay Horan of it all staying at OL because she's with the Thorns, right? She has signed a contract through 2025, I believe, with Portland Thorns, but she's been on loan with Olympique Lyon in France, and her time there has been really, really beneficial for this player. I think we've seen the growth of Lindsey Horan as a midfielder in her soccer IQ and her development on the pitch. And she's won a couple of trophies as well with OL. And I think her announcement to stay in France and continue playing after her loan was probably sad for a lot of Portland fans. They were expecting her to come back, continue to play. But you have to remember that this is a player that just did an entire season at one, their season, did a little bit of Champions League, has played a lot. And now, as the season comes to a close in these now weeks, she's preparing for the World Cup. And then after that, she's probably going to give her body a little bit of rest. And that's why she's not going back to Portland. But definitely sad a little bit for NWSL fans not to be able to watch Lindsey Horan after her great spell with OL in France.
You know, it was a big deal when she initially made the move to France. And it was kind of with the intention of essentially returning to the NWSL, Portland specifically, right? So they had actually restructured her contract a little bit so that when this initial loan with OL ended, she would eventually make her return back to NWSL and have, you know, be on contract with Portland. I believe it was through 2025.
Yeah.
So with her extending her stay in France, that obviously changes some things for Portland. I'm sure once things are actually finalized and all the I's dotted and the T's crossed, et cetera, that we'll eventually get an update maybe on the NWSL side of things. I'm very curious to sort of see how that might play out for the Thorns and her end in the future if she does want to eventually make her return back to the NWSL and with Portland. So something to keep an eye on for sure, because Lyon is such a powerhouse. They have zero problems a lot of the time attracting sort of world-class talent. And this is all kind of like the first bit of transfer news out of this club since the announcement that Michelle Kang is like forming a women's soccer kind of super group. She wants to have as many women's soccer brands and kind of all work together and share resources and stuff. And it's very, very exciting time, I think, not just for Kang, but Lyon as well. So we'll see how this kind of iteration of Lyon Femini kind of looks moving forward, kind of in this new era, pivoting to England, but still staying on some transfer news tip. We got to talk a little bit about Chelsea as well, because they have been in headlines. Former world record signing Pernille Harder announced that she's going to leave Chelsea at the end of the season. And that includes news around Chelsea captain Magdalena Eriksson as well. She also confirmed that she'll leave Chelsea at the end of the summer after 6 years with the club. And look, there's like the news with these two players is a big deal for like two different reasons. It's like, yeah. Pernille is like, I mentioned that she was a world record signing for them in terms of it's money, right? They showed her the dollar signs and said, hey, sign on this line. We want you here at Chelsea with us. You know, Emma Hayes building this sort of super team to try to make sure that they can compete and keep that grip on Women's Super League and eventually try to get over that hump in Champions League. And then for Eriksson, it's really big news just because of her her long tenure with Chelsea and everything that she's accomplished.
Yeah, Eriksson's been there since 2017. Like, crazy, crazy. And both their contracts were set to end at the end of this year. So I don't think it's a massive surprise. I mean, it is a big surprise and definitely a big shock with how long they've been there. But it's been a long time, right? I mean, Pernille Harder joined Chelsea in 2020. That was a 3-year contract. And the run that Chelsea went on since then with Emma Hayes, they won two WSL titles, Champions League final in 2021. Like, they have reached so much success. And the videos coming out of them saying that they weren't going to renew their contracts, like, making me cry over here.
It put you in your feels. No, yeah. It's a lot. I think, look, there was a lot of joy, I think, when Harder made her arrival to Chelsea. It's well documented on record out there that the two are partners. They do a lot of great work for LGBTQ causes. And so there was a lot of excitement to have these two reunited in Chelsea. And now it's rumored that they're going to both head to Bayern Munich. It'll be a return to the Frauen Bundesliga for Harder, where she has absolutely excelled in previous years with Wolfsburg specifically. So it'd be interesting to see how that team looks with the two of them together possibly contending for titles in Bundesliga. We'll see. But it was a chunk of news that I think maybe had Chelsea fans feel a bad for a little bit, just because it kind of came also on the heels of Frank Kirby's announcement that she's going to be out for the foreseeable future with Chelsea, but not only for club, going to miss out on the World Cup as well. So it sort of felt like this kind of 1-2 combo, perhaps, if you're a fan of the Blues. But don't get too down. Don't get too down, because Chelsea are in contention for some cool things still this season. And, of course, we'll chat a little bit about that as well. But another bit of news before we pivot into some more Chelsea-related things. There's some rumors tied to Chelsea that we want to talk about a little later in the show. But we're going to close out this portion of the news and notes segment with some NWSL-related news as well. Gotham, with some cool news out of Wednesday morning, announced a partnership with SL Benfica. Benfica, one of the world's most historic and best-known football clubs, and Gotham FC, the top-ranked club in the NWSL, are excited to announce a transformative partnership aimed at advancing women's soccer development and expanding their global reach. The statement read this morning. I liked to see this in my inbox this morning. It was cool to see more of this throughout NWSL. They're referred to as these strategic partnerships between NWSL sides and a lot of European clubs, clubs that have typically featured in Champions League. We saw the announcement of Red Stars and Wolfsburg earlier in the 2023 season, kind of to open up the new year. And prior to Michelle King having overseeing things with Olympique Lyonnaise Feminino, she was really interested in how this dynamic of having like kind of several women's clubs under one umbrella can look. But prior to her making that official, OL, Club America, and The Reign also announced a bit of a trio of partnership as well. So, I'm very curious of where Kang is going to lead some of these things moving forward. What does that mean for Club America, who had engaged in this strategic partnership with OL Reign, who is now up for sale, and Lyon, who now has a specific executive board to kind of report to with Kang at the helm. So, we're seeing a lot more of these in NWSL, and I'm all for it. I think they're very unique, and they provide certain resources and opportunities that maybe you think a little bit outside of the box for. So I'm curious as to how what we'll see between Gotham and Benfica, between the two of them in the early stages of this partnership.
Yeah, I'm excited to see kind of how it unfolds. I definitely think Gotham was taking a look at some of the other clubs, as you mentioned, that have partnerships with overseas clubs, and kind of how that has benefited them. Like the first thing that comes to mind is always Chicago Red Stars and Wolfsburg and their partnership that allowed Tierna Davidson to train in the Red Stars offseason. She was coming back from her ACL injury, and Chicago Red Stars weren't playing games and they weren't having organized training. And instead of training on her own to get back into shape, she went over to Wolfsburg and started training with them and playing with them as a training player, which allowed her coming back from that ACL injury to get back on the pitch a little bit faster, I believe. So to me, that's like one of the examples that just jumps out in my mind as a really good way to kind of utilize both of these clubs and sending personnel back and forth and things like that.
Yeah, and we're sticking with Wolfsburg. So, I mean, we already have seen it. We saw the announcement of Sandra Stark from Wolfsburg to the Red Stars on a short loan. She will be with the Red Stars, I believe, through June ahead of, you know, the World Cup. And we'll see how she continues to try to make an impact there. But that's another example. I mean, in Gotham, including that in their statement as well, they want to make sure that they, you know, have – Benfica as part of like the brand expansion, right? Embark on strategic initiatives. And that's going to include, when you're talking about strategic initiatives, I mean, that's going to include the possibility of, you know, future player transactions. So all that stuff is very exciting when you're like thinking and reading into some of these announcements with partnerships between two clubs or multiple clubs moving forward. So it was fun to see that drop early enough to where we were able to grab it and include it in our news and notes. I mean, because one thing that happens when we go live is news breaks.
Always
when we do like our news and notes. It was cool to sort of see this come through the pipeline and then be able to snag that and chat about it here with everyone. Let us know your thoughts about these partnerships in the chat. You know, we'd love to hear from you and what you think about them moving forward. But we've got some more news to talk about, still on some transfer rumor news, but that also affects United States women's national team. So stick with us. We're going to talk all about it after a quick break.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy? Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right. Let's talk about some injury-related news that is going to trickle into transfer news with Chelsea and United States women's national team news as well. So it's official. Katerina Macario released a statement just yesterday. If you're joining us on Wednesday, May 24th, she put out a statement essentially withdrawing herself from World Cup roster selection. Unfortunately, she will be what she refers to as physically unable and not ready to play in the upcoming World Cup. She also said, while she's excited and super optimistic about my future as a footballer, I'm sad to share that I won't be physically ready for selection to our U.S. World Cup team. She goes on to further thank the hospital and sports orthopedics who have helped her along her journey. And she also said that she will continue to support and cheer for the U.S. women's national team as they embark on their World Cup journey. So, you know, Lisa, just talking about this bit of news, you know, you and I have I feel like we've been building up to this World Cup for what feels like 2 years now, right? Since really the start of Attacking Third. I mean, we launched when this team headed to Tokyo for the Olympic Games, and we've been doing U.S. women's national team coverage ever since then. And the buildup to this World Cup and following this team into the CONCACAF W Championship, and now we're less than 2 months out. And part of that, part of the many storylines around the U.S. national team specifically, were some of the injuries that have impacted this team in the buildup to the 2023 World Cup. Katerina Macario has been one of those players. She unfortunately tore her ACL last June in the final league match with Lyon against a lowly bottom table team. They ended up, you know, thumping them 4-0, and she had come out of that game just 13 minutes into the match.
Yeah.
And this is also just after she helped Lyon win their eighth Champions League title, a match against FC Barcelona, a machine of a team at this point, a game in where she scored in that final, helped them lift that title. So riding high, right, to sort of have all that momentum kind of hit a brick wall, and then you tear your ACL right before what's essentially the CONCACAF W Championship, World Cup qualifier, and Olympic qualifier. It was devastating. And I feel like ever since then, we just sort of had Macario in the back of our minds, like, hey, the timeline for ACL rehabilitation can vary sometimes.
Yes.
Is there still a shot? And now this is sort of like, as the time went on, we sort of felt like the timeline was getting shorter and shorter and shorter. And even though in the back of your head, you're like, it's not looking good. There's something about when it comes from a player,
right?
And the player says, I'm done. It just hits a little different.
Completely, completely. I mean, she's so young, 23 years old. The future, there's a long future for Katerina Macario. But I think a lot of fans, as you talked about last June, it was kind of like, as soon as this happened, I mean, I remember watching that game where she went down and then we find out it's her ACL. Everyone starts doing math. They're like, okay, when does the World Cup start? When could she possibly be back? And as you mentioned, the recovery for ACLs varies drastically. And there are a million factors that go into it. She was at the FIFA Rehabilitation Center in Qatar for a very long time, recovering there with top doctors in the world, working specifically with soccer and football athletes. And there are setbacks and there are things that happen. And it, as you mentioned, the timeline for fans and for us was getting shorter and shorter. Imagine how it must have felt for her as she is just trying to recover, just trying to, hey, let's get back to running. Let's get back to equal strength between both of my legs. She's got the weight of the World Cup on her shoulders, of fans on her shoulders, of Black Wedanowski checking in on her shoulders, not in a bad way, but just another added pressure versus just someone else tearing their ACL looking to get back. And over the last couple weeks and couple months, you and I have talked off air privately, just because this is what we do and this is what we're interested in, about if we're going to see her. And it was always like, yeah, we would take her, even if she has only trained, we would take her to the World Cup. That's how crucial and vital she is of a player to this team. It would be worth it for us for her to be on that roster. Now, over the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks, as the timeline has gotten shorter and shorter and shorter, and she has yet to play a game, she has yet to train, yet to say, I'm back doing non-contact training. There was a spell there where fans thought, I thought, hey, maybe she'll sign with an NWSL team. That way she's available to play mid-May. She'll come back. She'll at least play games and at least be able to get games under her belt before the roster is named. But the timeline was just too short, and it's not worth it at that point to rush a player's injury, especially a player at the age of 23, who, yes, 4 years is a long time for another World Cup, but she'll be, still be under the age of 30 at that point. Like, she still has a World Cup.
Well,
Yes, like, she still has plenty of soccer left to play. I think definitely coming from the player, right? Her mouth, her words coming out to the fans means a lot more than just her name not being on the roster. I think getting out ahead of it a little bit and saying, like, listen, I know where I am in my recovery. This stinks, thanks to my doctors, but I'm putting this out there. I am not in selection for the World Cup. Definitely very mature of her to do. And I think it's the right thing for her to do. She put this out just yesterday too.
Yeah, no, mature, smart, you know, it allows the player to sort of still retain, you know, their, you know, their own agency and freedom and kind of navigating their career and where it is and where it's going. And she said it best, you know, she's really excited about her future as a footballer, as I think so many of us who follow the national team are as well. But you know, your wheels always are, at least ours are always turning and the gears are always moving in terms of like what comes next or what does it mean? And while we knew it was an extremely long shot for Macario to try to make a return back, get games in and make a really strong case for the World Cup roster, we just knew that the time kept running out, and there were the options where it looked like to try to get games in was getting, the window was getting slimmer and slimmer and slimmer. So to sort of see her come out with this and, you know, talk about all the reasons why she might not, you know, be able to play in the World Cup is still kind of just a, I mean, for lack of a better word, it's just a real bummer to see it and to kind of just have it official in front of your face and to know that that's not going to be an option, because even with those slim opportunities, that slim timeline, you just still look at Katerina Macario and you say, this is a generational type of player, a player that if she's able to run, you take her. And that was kind of the energy I think around this player, even with this injury that kind of had some setbacks at times. I mean, we opened up 2023 with that January camp with this national team. She wasn't part of that New Zealand camp, wasn't able to go. But even out of the early New Year updates out of those camps, and Andonovsky kind of saying like, hey, maybe we'll see her in trainings for She Believes Cup. Maybe we'll, you know, end of March, and then it was end of April, and then it was maybe May. And it kind of, you have to imagine that perhaps there was a setback, and that happens when you're rehabbing from such significant injury. And it just sort of felt as it kept getting pushed back. That's where kind of like the cloud kind of hangs over it, and you're kind of like, geez, like this is tough. And it is tough just because of when we are reflective of the coverage that we have done on this team in the past. Mercario was one of these central focal points.
Totally.
On this national team. When everything went through for her FIFA transfer and she was able to represent the United States, this was a player alongside Smith and Swanson with Lavelle in support that was going to be a focal part of this team's attack. I mean, it was essentially confirmed by Andonovsky coming out of some She Believes Cup windows, I believe in 2021, that they wanted to see that trio or quartet of players continue to get as much time as possible together. And you have Andonovsky even confirming that out of those final April windows against Ireland, saying, listen, Macario's been out, but this team was still going to be centered around Smith and Swanson, and now Swanson is out. So what does that mean for this national team moving forward? Who can possibly find themselves on this roster? She's a player. Macario's been a player who's typically been listed as a midfielder for Andonovsky on these national team camps, but she is such a versatile player that she can drop lower into the mid.
Totally.
Can ideally be your false nine, or she can lead that front line. And I think with Alex Morgan's, you know, recent return to form out of 2022 and now 2023, that is kind of your center target kind of forward that you're going to ask to do a lot of different things alongside your wingers. And it sort of looked like maybe at some point it was going to be a Mercario Morgan kind of 1-2 combination, that maybe Morgan would come in support versus actually kind of get these starts. You know, we heard from the coaching staff that veterans who are on the team are going to be relied upon in a different lens moving forward. So what, now that you've got not just Mercario out, but Swanson out, I think it presents different scenarios for the coaching staff and how they're going to evaluate or what they're going to rate as more important when they put together this final roster. Is it going to be more important to have a center forward option as a backup to Alex Morgan to take? Is it going to be more important, or is it going to be more important to have a more kind of creative, agile, kind of attacking style player? Who does it leave room for?
Yep.
So, you know, I wrote all about this on .com. Everybody can go and read it. Because I felt real down bad about Katarina Mercario officially withdrawing. And I said, we got to write about it. And so check it out if you want to see it or read it. But I think when you have a Swanson out, when you have a Mercario, these players that were the attack was going to be centered around, there's some different routes that coaches have to go to here when it comes to making a selection on this roster.
Yeah, completely. I mean, there's a lot of different players they can bring. And the fact that it's not just Mercario, but it is Swanson too, it adds another layer of pain. Hurt,
yeah.
Question marks to this team and kind of what's going to happen, and it's, we're still dealing with the top of the top of the top, right? You even look at someone like an Alyssa Thompson, who number one draft pick, playing with Angel City, getting goals, playing, stepping in as a professional and pretty much seamlessly.
Yeah.
I think that's a good option as well. But I like that you're plugging your article. We're actually going to talk about it next week a lot. We'll do like a U.S. Women's National Team roster prediction drop, what we want to do, who we want to see going to the World Cup, things like that, where we can really dive into all of this. Because, I mean, this announcement yesterday breaks a lot of people's hearts, but prayers are with you, Katarina Mercario. Good thoughts, good vibes. You'll get back there. There's plenty more soccer to be played down the road.
Look, and it's close. She's already rumored and tied to sign with Chelsea. We're just talking about the different bit of transfer news out of Europe, and this is absolutely one of them. Emma Hayes has Katarina Mercario in her sights. Apparently, it's been reported already that it is subject to a medical evaluation.
Yep.
So that's about as close as you can get to you know, sort of saying, hey, this is going to be my next club. You have your current club coach in Bon Pastor at Lyon saying she's also that confirming that she's not going to be back. There's just a lot already here that you can pluck from and say Makario is on the move to Chelsea. And but again, that's the caliber of player this is, that you want to continue to build with this player, even as she is nearing her return from an ACL. And I think if you're a Chelsea fan, you absolutely have to be excited about that. You have to be hyped for it. I mean, look, they've got Sam Kerr on a contract till at least 2024. Maybe they've got one more crack maybe at the Champions League. If Sam Kerr decides to make a different decision with her career, you want to try to build this team up as much as you can.
Lucy's saying it right. Makario is a 10, Sam Kerr is a 9. That's ridiculous. I know, Lucy. As soon as the transfer rumor about Makario going to Chelsea, everyone was like, jaw dropped. This is going to be unstoppable for all.
I can't wait to see it. I would love to see it, and I can't wait to see it. It sounds like we're going to see it. Blues kind of making sure that they're stacking themselves up and are in a good position to stay dominant, not just in Women's Super League, but hopefully get over that hump in Champions League, because there's news out of Paris. Le Parisien has reported that Chelsea will sign Canadian and PSG fullback Ashley Lawrence. And not only are they going to sign her, they're going to sign her to a multi-year deal. So they're just like going out there and picking up players and making these moves. You love to see it. I love to see it because I'm a Chelsea fan. So I'm like, yes, Emma Hayes, go out there, get these players. I mean, again, shout out to Lucy, who's referencing like how we could see Kerr and Makario play. But I mean, the idea of seeing two Canadians on a back line for Chelsea is very exciting to me with Buchanan at this point, and now possibly Lawrence as well. So I'm very excited about all the transfer rumors.
They're getting stacked from tip to tail. Chelsea's stacked.
Absolutely. And they've got some things to win. It's coming down to the final match day in Women's Super League, just like we all thought it would. Let's take a look at the top four in the Women's Super League table. If you're joining us live on YouTube, we've got great graphics for you to take a look at. Shout out to our social team. Weekend 21 in Women's Super League, Chelsea number one with 55 points. Man United just behind them with 53 points at number two. Arsenal number three with 47 points, and Man City with 44 points. So not as close when it comes to the three and four on the outside looking in, but it's coming down to the last match with 2 points separating Chelsea and United. Champions League spots on the line as well. Man City looking like they might miss out.
I know. Crazy. It's really crazy that City's at the bottom of this. I remember months ago, Sandra, talking about our top four teams and not too much has changed there in terms of our top four teams, but I think the order changed a lot. I predicted City much higher in the table heading into the final matched week.
Yeah, no, same. And I think with Buddy Shaw and her kind of run of form throughout the season this year, we kind of thought, hey, maybe they'll, you know, kind of rally around this player and make some noise. And they did for a little bit, but just not enough to keep up with what Mark Skinner is doing with Manchester United and Emma Hayes and Chelsea as well. So keep your eyes on the final matches. Look out for them across CBS Sports platforms. You can catch them on Golazo Network and Paramount Plus. So tune in. I mean, you want to be there and watch when the league is won by either Chelsea or Man United. We'll see. Let's keep it in Europe, though, to close out this second segment of our show. We've got some Women's Champions League updates because Wolfsburg and Barcelona will go head-to-head on June 3rd for the Champions League title, but they've got things to wrap up in their leagues, and Wolfsburg have won their 9th consecutive DFB Pokal. They are making history. It's the 10th time in club history that Wolfsburg has won the German Cup. Got to feel good winning the whole dang thing in the league before you have to take on FC Barcelona in Champions League. And while Barcelona has been on an incredible run this season, they've had a couple hiccups down this final stretch of the league ahead of their Champions League final. Not only was their undefeated or unbeaten streak snapped by Sevilla in a 1-1 draw, but Barcelona officially picked up a loss, a 2-1 loss, their first league loss in nearly 2 years, a 2-1 loss against Madrid CFF at Estadio Fernando Torres. Silver linings maybe for Barcelona, Alexia Putellas involved in this game, and she was able to get a goal in this game for Barcelona, but it just the moment of brilliance just wasn't enough to scratch out or spearhead a result for the team. And it's their first loss in 64 league matches. So maybe not the way you want to start, you know, head into a Champions League final, but hopefully they try to take some of the positives of their season and kind of dominate.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's the way you want to end, right? But streaks are meant to be ended.
Yeah, that's true.
They are. And this has happened to them the last time. They went on this incredible run, that ended again in June of 2021, and now this one ends again. But you're exactly right. Yeah. Alexia Putellas getting minutes in this game, and that's fantastic to see. Now, is the pressure off a little bit as they head into the Champions League final? Maybe. Maybe, right? It's no longer like, okay, we've got this giant – we're sitting in this glass box that no one breathes, no one moves, because we're sitting on this incredible streak and this incredible run. And the fact that it happened, I'm going to say slowly and then not all at once, with the draw first to Sevilla, and then they get the loss. It was like, okay, we haven't won. We just draw our unbeaten streak now, not our win streak, and then they go ahead and they end up a loss. I mean – silver lining for sure. Maybe pressure off now for the Champions.
I don't know. Look, it's
crazy that they went on for 2 years without losing. Like,
maybe it is crazy, but it also maybe gets a little stale. Like, maybe it does get a little stale. Maybe
it gets a little boring.
Maybe you're at a point in all of your dominance where you're like, okay, man, we've already at this point. I mean, in the season, they already clinched. Yeah, you know, the Liga F title in April. You know, this is already like a month ago, and they're just like, all right, we've already got the title. Like, what are we're focused on a much bigger prize from this point out. Like, what is this? Let's make sure Alexia gets some minutes and let's just go with it. Like, you know, I think that's kind of the response that folks might are probably going to look for. And it's honestly, it's probably the response that Barcelona is going to give. I mean, what type of lethal machine wouldn't want to give a false sense of security to their opposition? You know, it's like it's almost like we're reaching or pulling at a thread that isn't even there. You know, it's like, oh, Barcelona got their first loss, and it's just like, yeah, it's also their first loss in like 60 plus games, and they also won the league with 85 points and a goal difference of 108.
They're fine.
they've got Amati, you know, they've got Tianabo Mati. They've got Carolyn Graham Hansen. They've got Alexia Putellas apparently scoring goals before they head off to the Champions League. So it'll build up to a good match for sure. But congratulations to Wolfsburg and Barcelona for respectively winning their leagues. We've got one more bit of news to talk about. We're coming back stateside for all of our news and notes. So stick with us after a quick break.
New CBS Monday. NCIS is back.
We need all hands on deck.
So grab your gear.
NCIS!
And join our elite team.
What are the charges?
Murder.
New cases to be solved.
Double tap to the chest.
Same caliber as the murder weapon.
And new criminals to catch.
That's the bomb maker. Where's the bomb?
A new NCIS, Monday, 9, 8 central, on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
If you want to win your fantasy football league, it starts right now. The offseason is the best time to get ahead of the competition. We'll help you win your league on the Fantasy Football Today podcast, part of CBS Sports Podcast Network. Fantasy Football Today has 3 episodes every week following the latest news, giving you early rankings, early sleepers, breakouts, and busts. So if you're a dedicated fantasy football manager, check out the most dedicated podcast, Fantasy Football Today. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found.
All right, let's close things out with some soccer news. Back in the United States, we didn't get an opportunity to react to this because the last time we did a news and notes episode, again, things that break when Attacking Third goes live. If you want news to break, just make sure Attacking Third goes live, because it's like it'll happen, right when we're on air. So we didn't get a chance to react to this, so we wanted to bring it on to this episode and give ourselves a chance to discuss it with you all. News out of the USLW League. Shout out to President Amanda Vandervoort. We actually had an interview with her some time ago, so make sure you go and check it out because there was a lot of good information. But the USL Super League will launch in 2024, and the new update is that it is going to launch not as a second tier league as it was initially announced, but as a first division league in the United States. Big news.
Massive. This is massive coming out of the USL Super League and the W League that is to join. It was already going to be exciting because we need more women's professional leagues in the United States and more opportunity for teams to compete at a really high level. And when this was announced that it was going to be a Division One league, it basically saying that this will be in direct competition with the NWSL. Now, the teams that the USL Super League have announced across the country are – in direct competition with the NWSL based on where they are and kind of how that all breaks out. But is this at all a concern because of how the NWSL has just made it to its 10th year? And that was a huge celebration because former leagues haven't done it. And now we get this competition, plus the expansion teams in the NWSL. This means that there's going to be like 25 Division One top tier women's professional teams in the country in the next year or so, which is like mind-boggling to me. Yeah. I'm so excited about it, but there's so many question marks still to come about what this all means for the landscape.
Yeah, no, I'm eager to see if you know, if everything if gets approved. I mean, it sounds like it has for the most part. I know US soccer has to — there are certain things you have to go through to qualify for a first division league. So I think it was important that in this announcement that USL said, hey, we're not going to be second division. We want to launch as a first division in 2024. They came correct. They said, hey, we've got markets in place. We have met these like kind of like standard minimum thresholds for market areas and things like that. So, I mean, even just looking at the map in place for this new league alongside NWSL, there's a lot of teams in states where there are already NWSL clubs right, that have already been in these markets and have tapped into, you know, the women's soccer, you know, fan base. I think whether, like, for example, we're looking at Washington State, there's, you know, Washington State is going to have a USL team. There's now going to be three NWSL sides in the state of California, but that's also going to include a USL team, a couple of different opportunities for USL sites in Arizona, in Texas, kind of in the central area of the country as well, where I know I've been dreaming for more teams essentially. So, you know, Wisconsin, Tennessee, it's a lot of opportunity here.
Yeah, a lot of opportunity. So the way that the USL Super League and the way that they announced it is that there's going to be initial markets for the inaugural 2024 season. Some of those including Charlotte, North Carolina, Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas, Lexington, Kentucky, Phoenix, Arizona, Washington State, Tampa Bay, Florida, Arizona, Tucson, Arizona, and then Washington, D.C. And then they announced other markets that would be coming in subsequent seasons. So they're still waiting on a couple approvals, but that including Chattanooga, Tennessee, Indianapolis, Indiana, Jacksonville, Florida, Madison, Wisconsin, Oakland, California. So they've already put out there a number of cities that are already going to have them. They've got approval and they're ready to hit the ground running in 2024. And then a couple more that it's like, okay, these are our top ones to get into play. They just need to nail down a stadium and a couple other details need to be wrinkled out before they can get into play. But yeah, I mean, competition. Also, like Washington, D.C., like the fact that it's very specifically Washington, D.C., there's already Washington Spirit there in Washington, D.C. That's the only one so far that's like in direct city competition that has been announced so far.
No, it's it was interesting to sort of see the layout of the map and the announcement when it came through. And it's so all excellent points that you bring up, but they're not little points, they're big ones. It's like, oh, it's like not only do you have to have the interested markets, but you've got to have the money behind it and in ownership groups, the facilities, etc. Like there are certain minimum standards that these clubs are gonna have to meet in order to retain and maintain a Division One or a first division status within the U.S. soccer sphere in this country. So, I mean, it's, we hear it all the time that, you know, competition is a good thing. But I don't know if out of 2024 that this is going to be something that's going to be considered like direct competition with NWSL specifically. I think one of the things that I think are really interesting about it, though, that will set itself apart from NWSL. So maybe there's not going to be like direct comp, like that immediate direct competition in terms of, I think when I think of competition, it's like, which players are you stealing from which league? And I don't know if that's going to happen right away. Right. I just don't, I don't think like Lindsey Horan is going to come back to the States and play in the USL league. I just don't. So
I don't see that happening.
Anything's possible, of course, but I just don't think that's going to happen. So,
and it's also on a different schedule, right?
I was alluding to, there's a lot of cool different things here that can set USL apart from NWSL. One of those things will be this schedule. So we've heard a lot of this, you know, this back and forth about the benefits of going to, you know, an August to June kind of schedule instead of a, you know, kind of not as year round schedule like the league
March,
is.
They have a spring,
a spring to fall league. And so they want to have, you know, August to June and sort of make sure that they're also on a similar global calendar schedule. And that is something that's going to be I think for me more than anything else, one of the main differences that will set them apart from NWSL. Not so much the markets that they've introduced and how they want to go from second division to first division. That stuff is always a possibility if you get all of those right pieces in place, whether it's the money, the investment, and facilities.
Yeah.
I think what's really going to help set them apart and might attract some players will be the difference in calendar.
I do too. I do. I really think that's a big change that a lot of people have kind of circled and their eyes have drawn to it. They just make some interesting points, like the fact that in this inaugural 2024 season set to kick off in August, they're aiming to have 10 to 12 teams when only 8 are initially announced as being able and ready to go. Now, they have a bit more time than, say, the NWSL season that is having Utah Royals in the Bay Area joining in January, right? That's when they need to be ready to go of 2024. This is August of 2024, but still, I think like the idea is there, right? This is, this needs to happen. It does need to happen. There are 101 professional men's soccer teams in the United States. There are 12 women's teams, 12. That is it. Because the way the MLS works is they have these feeder systems and they have like the next pro teams and they have the USL and League One and Champions League. And they have all these different divisions, which act as feeder systems for these players. Now, there's so many different factors that come into this. Is the NWSL going to start doing feeder programs and homegrown programs? I think that would be really beneficial, but that's not going to come just like that. You have to develop that and you have to be able to make these clubs that have feeder programs and develop children from a young age if they want to do that. That's why it's been so successful in the MLS. I mean, specifically, I'm looking at like the Philadelphia Union. They have so many homegrown players. That's what really they rely on to build their team, not necessarily the drafts and getting international signings, but they're players that they've been developing since they were 10, 12 years old to play within this system. Now, this is going to help, right? Having these another 12 teams. So we go from 12 women's professional teams to 24, 26 in just a matter of 2 years. But 101 compared to the men's is very, very different. It's going to take some growing pains. We're going to see how this all plays out.
Yeah. I'm excited to see if they're going to stick with the 8 teams, if there's going to be, you know,
what 10 to 12,
expanded to at least 10, you know, very, very curious about it. You know, I think even some of the ownership groups that are like even attached to, you know, to have interest in this. I mean, the club out of Tucson, Arizona has John Perlman and Jeff Harnell as part of their like ownership structure. I mean, Tim Tebow, part of like Jacksonville, Florida's potential ownership, you know, and we've seen a lot out of Forward Madison and Oakland Roots as well. And these are the clubs that want to, you know, add a women's side into their soccer portfolio. So, you know, it's the initial announcements, and I'm sure we'll eventually see some updates along the way. But, you know, I think they're aware of that. I think they're in front of it in the sense that they understand that there are certain standards that you have at the Division I level, and they have to try to make sure that they not only meet those standards, but maintain them, right, moving forward. So we'll see. It's an exciting time for sure. And 2024 is literally right around the corner. It's here, basically. Like, we're already halfway through 2023. We're already thinking about 2024. But let's get to the World Cup first, Lisa. For
please,
sure.
Please, can we just get there?
We're almost there. Thanks everybody for joining us along on this episode. That's all we've got for you today. We hope you enjoyed everything that we chatted about. Make sure you tune in along the way for all of our content in the pipeline. Download, follow, listen to us anywhere you get your podcast. Subscribe to us on YouTube at youtube.com/TacticsNerd. We'll be back with more content for you. Stay tuned. Sandra and Lisa Roman was a Tacticsnerd.
New CBS Monday.
Federal agents!
Hands where we can see them.
NCIS Hawaii is back.
About to set it up!
New criminals to catch.
Armed robbery, aggravated assault, murder.
And new investigations to be solved.
These guys were good, but even masters make mistakes.
Vanessa Lachey and featuring LL Cool J.
Violin Island, you got it.
Welcome to paradise.
A new NCIS Hawaii, Monday, 10/9 Central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.